Welcome back to the Taylor Report. I'm Phil Taylor, your host, and this is CIUT 89.5 FM. We are on SoundCloud and we are on Facebook as well. We want to continue with comments about work with Ramsey Clark and his importance in modern history. And he is going to be missed all over the world. I noticed there's a statement from the leader of president of Cuba, and they'll be coming from all over the world because he opposed U.S. aggression and he opposed U.S. imperialism. It was, after all, the main issue was to try to argue on behalf of the American people the need to have a government that listens to and follows international law and respects the institutions such as the United Nations and stops this policy of America first, American hegemony, America number one, which is so disruptive. It has been disrupting the World Health Organization. It is now disrupting, of course, this problem of distribution of vaccines because America is on the side of monopolies and is preventing people in the underdeveloped countries, less developed, to get vaccines. And it has been turned into the very kinds of thing that Ramsey hated, which is in the dogged determination to be number one, harming people with whom there is no legal political difference whatsoever. And of course, you heard it, the interview on Syria, you know what his thoughts were on that matter. I have an item that I want to make sure I bring to our listeners' attention. I want to keep up also with our latest programming, and we've been following the case of Paul Rusesabagina, and who was kidnapped and brought to Rwanda illegally, and Western governments have not protested. I don't know how the U.S. would ever protest anyway, since it's known for illegal rendition of individuals, taking them out of countries like Italy in Europe and transferring them to Guantanamo, Cuba, which is a sovereign country, but Americans have one little piece of it, and Guantanamo, and they made a prison there. But Paul Rusesabagina has been a victim of this process. And of course, there's been propaganda against him. And somebody has spoken up that I was very pleased to see. And that is Michel Houtart. And he has written a definition of a hero. And he identifies himself. He says, in 1994, I was director of Sabena, in charge of coordinating the 30 or so subsidiaries, including Hotel Mille Collines, known to our listeners, the Hotel Rwanda. And April 12, 1994, Cornelis Beek, the manager of the Mille Collines, was evacuated to Brussels. I then appointed Paul Rusesabagina as interim director. I created in Brussels in April 94, a crisis center, and myself to discuss the situation. Almost every evening, our crisis center had a telephone communication with Paul to examine all possible actions to avoid genocide in the hotel and to protect all occupants. In the beginning, food and drink was provided by the hotel and by the Sabena reserves for air passengers. Also, I asked to charge these benefits or to request an acknowledgement of debt in favor of the hotel. That is, it wouldn't be on the people in the hotel. After a few weeks, the reserves being exhausted, it is the International Red Cross which supplied the hotel and poured potable water into the swimming pool. From that moment on, I gave instructions to stop all payment requests. That is, you know, people having to pay their for the rooms. The hotel later decided never to claim. They never even tried to collect that. This is very important. I'm reading this because there are now high-ranking people inside the Rwandan government who are telling lies about this. So I'd like them all to go into court with this gentleman because it was his job. And he's telling you what they did. And these propagandists who are attacking Paul, saying, oh, Paul did this and Paul did that. He's telling you what they did. He said, if certain passages of the film Hotel Rwanda have been summarized and romanticized, this does not detract from the heroic behavior of Paul versus Abagina during the entire period of the genocide. During these 3 months, Paul's only concern was to save all the occupants. At the end of June, Paul telephoned me to warn me that the Rwandan army required a list of the Tutsis residing in the hotel, and that if this list was not provided, the occupants might be massacred. Faced with the gravity of the situation, I asked Pierre Godefried, president of Sabena, to participate in the discussion without the slightest hesitation. He said, don't provide a list, and added that he would do everything possible to avoid a massacre. 2 hours later, he organized a press conference in front of numerous television stations, begging all parties to avoid a massacre. Simultaneously, I telephoned to France to the special number concerning Rwandan affairs, and I in contact with a representative of the Quai d'Orsay, and explained to him the gravity of the situation. He informed me that he would immediately notify President Mitterrand. A few weeks later, I received extracts from the French press indicating that the president had intervened with both camps. By the way, when you say both camps, that means he was talking to the RPF as well as to the government to protect the refugees. After the refugees left the hotel, after they left the hotel, was looted. Fortunately, not ransacked. At the end of July 1994, Cornelius Beek returned to Kigali to put the hotel back in working order. At no time, neither Cornelius Beek nor myself heard criticism of Paul Rusesabagina from the staff or from former refugees. Quite the contrary. The dictionary says the following definition is of a hero: a person who is distinguished by exceptional qualities or actions by his courage in the face of danger. This definition corresponds perfectly to the behavior of Paul Rusesabagina during the period of the genocide. As former director of Sabena, they owned the Milkoline. That's very important testimony, in my opinion, and I hope our listeners pay attention, because Rusesabagina is being held after being kidnapped by the government of Paul Kagame, and lies of all types are being told. But this is particularly, they're trying to belittle what Paul did, and it is not doable, but it is. Really speaks to the character of that government that they would try to smear him, particularly, by the way, since many of those who are now at the prompting, I suspect, of the president and his party, and saying these things, they were all very appreciative of Paul Rusesabagina in 1994. Now they're trying to change their stories in order to see if they can put him in prison for a long stretch. Another item, and this is particularly apropos of our talking about Ramsey Clark, there is something rather striking. I don't know if our listeners are seeing this anywhere, but it is being reported. In an unexpected move, the U.S. Navy this week conducted a freedom of navigation patrol in Indian waters without India's prior consent, declaring that it was intended as a challenge to India's excessive maritime claims. This is something to follow, because This is once again the mask coming off of a great power that doesn't think it has to accede to the laws of the sea. There's a quote from, this is from the Seventh Fleet Public Affairs, April the 7th, 2021. U.S. forces operate in the Indo-Pacific region, they made that term up by the way, Indo-Pacific region, on a daily basis. All operations are designed in accordance with international law and demonstrate that the United States will fly, sail, and operate wherever international law allows. Now, more importantly to this is that they've been sailing more and more and they're sending battleships into waters that are Chinese waters in the Taiwan Straits. But the India story is indicative of something very important. That is, they don't care about anybody. You know, they seem to forget they've been trying to recruit India as part of their game against China. And to do this to India, it shows that this is the sort of gunboat mind of the beginning of the 20th century. But they actually don't care that much about allies. They don't think they need them. And they also, I suppose, want to make sure that India understands that they're going to have to follow closely whatever the Americans tell them. Rather important. This news would bring out the wry, darkly humorous side of Ramsey Clark. I'm sure he had many, had a way of making observations on these things. He had lived through it. He would say, from having been inside in American administration, he says, you can't believe the amount of pressure they can bring to bear on people, on other states. And, you know, they can break them. Just the sheer weight that they can bring to governments who think about defying them. We're seeing in the case of the Philippines, by the way, a government that talks about that openly, about they don't appreciate being pushed. And this American policy of trying to encircle China and provoke China is something we should oppose. Ramsey Clark said on occasions when he spoke here, and he said it in interviews with the Taylor Report, he said, you know, Canada is supposed to be a friend of the United States. He says the best way, best thing a friend can do is to tell his friend when he is making a mistake, when he's being a bully. He said that Canada should be a good friend and tell the United States to stop being a bully. Think of Meng Wanzhou. That would be a perfect illustration of a time when it would have been, it should have been in Canada's interest and in the interest of the Americans to say, no, look, enough of this. Do not try to win a trade war by locking up a businesswoman. Just that's kidnapping. And an outrage. Again, this is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT. It's 89.5 FM. One of the things I have to say about from my years of working with Ramsey that I was very pleased that he has this year, he got a Hollywood send-off in the sense that the movie Trial of the Chicago Seven had a cameo role by Michael Keaton playing Ramsey in a very important segment of the film. And I was impressed. I was really sorry that I couldn't call Ramsey. Ramsey's been rather, I knew he was in poor health and I was certainly not going to trouble him. But I did want to tell him that I was pleased at Michael Keaton's performance because he didn't attempt to do the accent. And he didn't, of course, he didn't resemble him that much, but he captured his personality and his mannerisms and his way of speaking and his, I would say that the pace, the timing of his speech. Ramsey could be, as I said, he had a dry and careful, he did talk like a Texan. Actually, his sound, if you wanted to get his sound, you, of course, heard the interview, but he sounded an awful lot like Lyndon Johnson. But that film is worth watching for the portrayal of Ramsey Clark by Michael Keaton. And what was it was so nice to see someone who has been heroic in resisting the worst tendencies in American life and politics, and it's at great cost. And, you know, loss of personal friends, a lot of rancor, and certainly a lot of having to endure mockery or smears. But to see him recognized for his integrity and his political and legal smarts, it was a pleasure. And if you have not seen the trial of the Chicago Seven, I would just watch that segment, because what happens in that scene was, I would say, that's Ramsey all over. That was, I felt very comfortable watching that. I once had the privilege, I use that word again, of going to Montreal with Ramsey when he had to give a speech there. And a meeting was arranged with a former Premier of Quebec, Mr. Landry. And Landry was very pleased to meet Ramsey, and it was a pleasure to be in the conversation. And Landry said to him, you know, your country is a great republic. It's a, we think of it as a, you know, an exemplar of a Western democracy. But he said, it doesn't actually seem to work. I don't understand why. And Ramsey said, It's not a democracy, it's a plutocracy. Money rules. Money rules the parties. We've allowed money, monopolies, to be so deeply embedded in the politics that what we have is a plutocracy. And when I heard that, I hadn't followed closely, you know, the entire career of Ramsey, but I now find, of course, he's given talks on the subject. I urge people to find those talks and to see what he had to say about these things. On this matter of Syria that Ramsey was addressing, we really ought to think about, please think about what's going on there. This a sovereign country, a member of the United Nations, is defending itself against terrorists that enter its country from, primarily from Turkey, but other places, well-armed terrorist groups financed by United Kingdom and France and the United States. There's no disputing it. They have done that. And yet those countries put sanctions on Syria, trying to prevent it from being able to defend itself. You know, the last time you really saw this clearly was when Franco, the fascists, captured Spain. And when he entered Spain with the help of Hitler and Mussolini, the first thing that happened was the European countries got together and said, oh, we can't sell arms there. We have to be neutral. Neutral about what? Spain had a democratically elected government. It was a sovereign country with a democratically elected government. And yet they British and the French and Germans, of course, said, oh, well, no. Well, the Germans didn't say it. Britain and the United States said, oh, we can't sell them, we can't provide arms. But meanwhile, Mussolini and Hitler did supply arms, and they didn't say, you have to stop. They allowed it to happen. That was how the fascist Franco captured Spain. They squeezed Spain until it was it, without arms. Air Force couldn't replenish its strength, and it was defeated, crushed. That was a horrible long period in darkness under Franco as a result. Now this is being attempted on Syria. Syria is a republic. It is a secular. It has a secular government led by a very bright, well-spoken individual who knows about the world and how it worked. And yet the United States is putting sanctions and trying to destroy it while supporting sectarians who kill people based on their ethnicity or their religious affiliation. Whereas the government of Syria is a secular government. This is the kind of thing that caused Ramsi to take the field. He was a figure like Quixote. He would go out and take them on. He didn't care how many. He didn't care how famous. He didn't care anything. He was gonna exhaust himself in the pursuit of a just cause. And that's his story of his life. He lived up to it. And in coming weeks, we're going to be talking about all of these matters at greater length. We're going to be talking to the family of Takarudamana and what happened in the case there. We're going to be talking about the situations like that in the Panama, the Americans' naked aggression against Panama, and of which, as you know, Ronald Reagan said, we stole it fair and square. They entered the country, captured the president, drug him off and put him in a Florida prison. And to this day, people here are happy with it because we have colonialism, racism in our DNA. All right, this has been the Taylor Report. See you next week.